Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Dr. Bruce Lipton as my special expert guest. Bruce Lipton, PhD, is an internationally recognized leader in bridging science and spirit, stem cell biologist, best-selling author of The Biology of Belief, and recipient of the 2009 GOI Peace Award. Bruce has been a guest speaker on hundreds of TV and radio shows, as well as keynote presenter for national and international conferences. Dr. Lipton began his scientific career as a cell biologist. He received his PhD from the University of Virginia at Charlottesville before joining the Department of Anatomy at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine in 1973. Bruce is the author of many books, including Peak Vitality, Spontaneous Evolution, and The Honeymoon Effect. He is regarded as one of the leading voices of the new biology, which includes research and discovery in cell communication, quantum physics, epigenetics, and an emphasis on spiritual, physical, and mental well-being. Good afternoon, Bruce, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
I am so happy to be here with you, Corey, and thank you so much. And I so appreciate your audience. So all these people out there looking to take some power back over their lives and create what is possible for us, the most beautiful thing, life.
Well, you're a beautiful man. I can tell just the way you're speaking to me now, and it's a pleasure to have you on the line. Most of our students, Bruce, are personal trainers, they're health food store retailers, they're athletes, and they're healthcare professionals. So their ears will be glued to this interview. Now, let's start off by talking about what stuck out in my mind after reading The Biology of Belief. You talked about working with cells and culture, and something really hit you that was phenomenal. And can you talk about that?
Yeah, let's just say at this point I was in developmental biology. I was also teaching medical students about the nature of cells and cell biology and embryology, those things about the nature of cells. And what's significant is in the classroom, I was teaching a concept called genetic determinism. This is a belief that genes are controlling the character of our life, not just our physical character, but our emotional and behavioral character. So we start to attribute any problem in our lives to, oh, there's a gene somewhere that's, you know, faulty. And we bought into this belief that genes can regulate themselves. In other words, people commonly say a gene turned on, a gene turned off, a gene caused this. And so we bought into this belief. And while I was teaching that in the medical school classroom, my research on muscular dystrophy was focusing on cloning stem cells. Two quick definitions. A stem cell is an embryonic cell. And the name changes because before you're born, it's called an embryonic cell. And the moment after you're born, the same cell is now called a stem cell because you're not an embryo. And the reason why we are filled with stem cells is that every day we lose conventionally about hundreds of billions, several hundred billion cells die every day. That's natural, normal attrition rate. But the understanding is obvious. At some point, if you're losing hundreds of billions of cells every day, you better darn well be replacing hundreds of billions of cells. And that's where stem cells come in. They are the source of replenishing and enhancing our lives. So, for example, if you're exercising and you're building up your muscle, you have to add more cells to that. So there are stem cells that will then contribute to the development of the muscle. So stem cells are for replacement and for building the body. So I'm cloning them, and that second definition, cloning, means this. I take one stem cell, put it in a petri dish by itself, and the cell divides after about 10 hours. So first there's one cell, then two, and then it doubles, 4, 8, 16, 32. So after a week, I have about 50,000 stem cells in a petri dish. Now, the most important fact is this. They all came from one parent. So that meant I have 50,000 genetically identical cells. And these are these stem cells. Now, here's the situation, and it's going to really connect to the trainers and the providers of nourishment and supplements. And here's where it comes down to, is that cells grow in tissue culture medium. So when I'm growing cells, I make tissue culture medium. I say, what does it represent? I say, well, whatever animal I get the cells from, I look at the blood composition. So if I'm growing mouse cells, I look at the composition of mouse blood and try to synthesize that so that the cells are in a natural environment, the blood. And if I grow human cells, then I look at human blood composition, try to make that and put that in a dish. So culture medium is my synthetic version of blood. So I have genetically identical cells, and here's what I do. I split them into three different petri dishes, so I have genetically identical cells in three different dishes. But I change the chemical composition of the culture medium, the equivalent of blood. I change some of the chemistry. So in three dishes, genetically identical cells, but three different environments because the culture medium is a little different in each one. What's the significance is that at the end of the experiment, in environment A, the cells form muscle. In environment B, a little different culture medium, the cells form bone. In environment C, yet a little different culture medium, the cells form fat cells. And you're left with this very profoundly important question, what controls the fate of the cells? And when you come down to it, then you realize, oh my God, they all have the same genes. So you can't say genes caused it. They all have the same genes. The only thing that was different was the composition of the culture medium, the environment in which cells live. This was my first insight. Actually, I saw this in 1967 to what is now a new science called epigenetics. So let's go back. I was teaching in the laboratory a concept called genetics, which means genes control life. And that's where we get the idea that genes turn on and off and their characters are expressed because the genes are causing them by turning on and off. So I got cancer because a cancer gene turned on, that, you know, that idea. And I say, well, that's what I was teaching. And I say, why is it relevant? And here's an important reason, and this is important for all the people you work with. And that is, the public is left with a belief that the character of their health is not in their control. It's under the control of genes. And I say, relevance to that, and the answer is profoundly important. And that is, as far as we know, we didn't pick the genes we came with. And if we don't like the characteristics, we just can't go change the genes. And all of a sudden you realize, oh, my God, my life is not under my control. My life is under the control of these genes. I didn't pick them. I can't change them, and they control me. I am a victim of my heredity. So people believe that their fate is going to be predetermined by looking at their family issues and then thinking, oh, my God, I have genes for that. Cancer, diabetes, Alzheimer's, cardiovascular disease, whatever it is running in a family, it has been attributed to genes. So I say, yeah, the problem with what we taught medical students in genetics is that people are victims and have no power over their control of their health. In contrast, I say, what was the work that I was looking at? I said, oh, my God, it says that the environment was controlling the genetics of the cell. I say, well, why is that relevant? Because we're the ones that can change the environment. And all of a sudden, I realize, wait, the genes are controlled by something that we can control, the environment. And why that becomes relevant then, it says, well, then you're no longer a victim in the new science called epigenetics. And I say, the scientists sound the same, genetics and epigenetics. I say, here's the difference. When I say genetic control, which is a conventional thought, it simply means control by genes. In contrast, if I say epigenetic control, epi means above. And I say, oh, well, then epigenetic control literally means control above the genes. And the difference is when we know that the environment is actually impacting our genes, and that says how we deal with the environment, then directly controls our health, which then we're not victims of our health. We are masters. And that the new science of epigenetics is so completely different than the conventional belief about genes turning on and off controlling life, because they don't do that at all. It's a completely false idea. It's the environment, and it becomes very important because I say, well, look, the fate of my cells in the culture dish was based on the composition of the environment, the culture medium. I say, yeah, and that is what? The equivalent of blood. So you say, well, that's a nice story, Bruce, about cells in a petri dish and all that. And I go, no, wait. When we look in the mirror and see ourselves, when we see a single individual looking back, I go, well, that's a misperception. Because the truth is, a human being is made out of about 50 trillion cells. The cells, the individual cells, are the living entities. Bruce, by definition, is not a single entity. Bruce is a name for a community of 50 trillion cells. So basically, you know, I want to look at it in a very simple way. A human body is a skin-covered petri dish. I go, absolutely, with 50 trillion cells inside. And I say, you've got culture medium. Yeah, I said, it's blood. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, my God. Then the composition of the culture medium in the human body, that is the blood, then very much determines the genetics and the behavior of our cells. And And now we turn into your community, Corey, when we start to say, now, how do I influence the composition of that blood to control my life? And now we open it up to the complete story that your community is all involved with regarding nutrition. And so I think you may want to ask me questions based on that, if that made any sense.
It makes total sense. Thank you. That's a great description. Now, some of the students have a hard time thinking, okay, so I understand that the environment is influencing genetic expression, but how does that work? How do my thoughts or how does food or air actually affect gene expression? Can you maybe give us a little bit of a description of that?
Yeah, okay. Well, let's go back to the idea was this. I went back to the original cell cultures that I was doing cloning and started to recognize that the environmental signals were controlling behavior, and that was the big question I had to deal with because at the time, 1970 approximately, science was so caught up in the genetics that they were still in the belief, well, genes turn themselves on and off, so nobody had to worry about anything. Genes, though, just had to figure out when they would turn on and off. And so they never looked at what I was saying. I was saying that the environmental signals outside of the cell were controlling the genetics inside the cell. So that's what took me a little bit longer to get my work out, was to explain the mechanism. So here's how it is. A cell and a human, imagine them as identical organisms because a human being made out of cells has everything that we do is only being done by cells. So there's no new function in most of our cells or no different function in most of our cells than are present in your entire body. Every function in your body is already present in a functional state in a single cell. Cells have a respiratory, digestive, excretory, reproductive, musculoskeletal system. Cells even have an immune system. Significant cells have a nervous system. And the fact was this, in my research, I started to realize something very profound, and that is this. The nucleus in the textbooks is where the genes are. And in the textbooks, the nucleus is called the brain of the cell because they said, oh, well, genes turn on and off. They're like neurons. And the nucleus being all of these neurons together, like the brain, is controlling the fate of the cells. And it's like, well, first of all, that concept is false. Genes do not turn on and off. Genes are blueprints. And let's just simplify it right down to the very point. It is a molecular blueprint that is completely analogous to a paper blueprint in an architect's office. It just has a pattern. I say relevance. You go in the architect's office and you ask her, is your blueprint on or off? And she'll look at you, hey, are you crazy? It's a blueprint. It's no on and off. It's a blueprint. I go, precisely. Genes have no on and off. They're blueprints. They have to be read. Ah, that's where the control comes from. Who's going to read the blueprints, not the blueprints themselves? So the idea is we've called the nucleus the brain of the cell. The joke is the nucleus just has all the blueprints. And I say, when do you use them? Reproduction, replacing the proteins in a cell or replacing the cell. So I go, oh my goodness, the nucleus is not the brain of the cell. The nucleus is a gonad of the cell. It's reproduction. That's all it is reproduction. The idea of what is controlling the reproduction, that's where my research led me to the skin or membrane of the cell. And the significance is there are switches built into the membrane that read environmental signals and then relay the signals from the environment to control the activity of the cell and the genetics of the cell. And that's when I started to look at the membrane. I said, oh my God, the membrane's a nervous system. And the joke is that if you understand human embryology, our nervous system comes from the outer membrane of the embryo, the skin. So a cell and a human are pretty much the same, reading the environment through the skin. And our skin has receptors, eyes, ears, nose, taste, touch, pain, temperature, pressure, et cetera, et cetera. I go, the skin of the cell has receptors. They're not as complex as ours. They're just simple molecules with antennas, more or less, reading what signals are in the environment. It's sort of like if you could see the surface of the cell, it's like a keyboard. And you can type on it by hitting the receptors. And that's information that now goes in. And the signals from the membrane are the ones that activate the reading of the genes. So I say, oh, well, the signals picked up by the membrane. I go, yeah, in a cell, in a body, the membrane is picking up the signals for the cell. I say, yeah, but from where? I say, the environment. I go, yeah, but the environment and body. I say, oh, we already said that. It was the blood. I say, so signals in the blood, like hormones, estrogen, or things like glucose, nutrients, or signals like calcium, these things dissolved in the blood can touch the surface of the cell. And I said the surface is like a keyboard. So the environmental signals are almost like pushing the keys whatever signal, an estrogen signal is a different signal than a calcium signal, or testosterone, or adrenaline. All these are different signals. And so I say, okay, the cell has a nucleus with programs in it, and the environmental signals touch the surface of the cell, which is like a keyboard, and calls up the programs. And then we're now left with the fact, okay, the chemical composition of the blood is controlled by, and then we fill in the blank, the brain. I say, well, yeah, the brain releases the neurochemicals and the regulators of blood composition. It releases that. So the brain is controlling the composition. So what signals should be sent by the brain? And the answer is, what the brain is interpreting from the environment, reading the environment, because the cells have to adjust their behavior to what's going on in the environment. Should we be in growth or should we be in fight or flight? Well, that determines on what's the information. The brain is controlling the chemistry, but the brain's chemistry, and this is the final link, and this is the big one, the chemistry released by the brain is based on the picture in the mind, meaning the function of the mind is to interpret what's going on in the world. And when it interprets what's going on, it releases chemistry to complement that interpretation. I'll give you a simple example. We're all sitting here right now, eyes closed. I say, if your eyes just open up and someone you love is in front of you, you're going to get a kick, a neurological kick. The hormones are going to be released from the brain that emphasize love, such as dopamine, pleasure. So when you see someone you love, you feel pleasure in that. But when you see someone you love, a bonding is involved, and that releases oxytocin. If you see someone you love and you want to maintain attraction, then you want to be more attractive. And so the brain releases vasopressin, a hormone which makes you more attractive. And growth hormone is released in love. So a person who is in love has this enriched blood, including growth medium in it. And I say relevance. People in love glow. They are healthy. They're beautiful. I go, what's that? That's not a coincidence. That is what? An interpretation of a picture in the mind of love. And I go, same person sitting there, eyes closed, but this time when they open them, something scary is there. I say, well, the chemistry that was released by the brain in love is not the chemistry released by the brain in fear. In fear, we release stress hormones such as cortisol. We release inflammatory agents and regulators of the immune system. And all of these agents, I say, that's a completely different response for the body. So a protection response has a completely different physiology and behavior than a growth response. I say, yeah, and what controlled it? The chemistry of the blood. I say, yeah, but what determined the chemistry? The picture in the mind. And all of a sudden, say, oh my God, how you see the world is adjusting the chemistry to adjust your body to match your perception of the world. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh my God, if we change our perception or the environment in which we live, it becomes very important because that changes the chemistry of the brain, which then changes the genetics and the behavior of the cell. And all of a sudden, it's like you're not a victim of genes running amok. Your issues are completely controlled by your consciousness, your perceptions, your belief. And this is the basis of something called the placebo effect. I believe this is the pill that's going to heal me. And damn it, I take the pill and I got better. And then find out the pill was a sugar pill. I said, well, then what healed that person? It wasn't the sugar pill. It was the belief, the perception, the picture in the mind of this is healing me. And that's what healed them, not the drug. So, conclusion, the composition of the culture medium is integral to the fate of the cells in your body. The composition of your culture medium is based on two fundamental things. One, nutrition. I'll just bring that up quickly because that's a very big deal. And I'll just give you a simple statement. I create blood, the equivalent culture medium in the laboratory. I can assure you of one fact. I do not buy my ingredients at Kmart. I get only the best ingredients. Anything less than the best ingredients in culture medium can be immediately detected when you put it in the cells and see how they lose their vitality. That this chemistry of the culture medium is critical, because it is what is nourishing and feeding the dynamic needs of the cell. So I say, oh, well, if you're making culture medium yourself in your body, then obviously the most important thing at this point is nutritionally effective, high quality. This is what you want because you're feeding these cells with it. That's what you're doing. And then secondarily, in addition to nutrition, the question is, what signals is the mind sending to adjust the cells? And the point is very simple. All of this may be complicated, but I simplify it right here. Most people, when they were younger, played with something called paint by numbers, and you get an outline of a picture, and it's all carved up in little sections with numbers in it. And the numbers then match paint. And then when you take those specific colors and fill in the numbers correctly, you end up with this beautiful picture. I go, here's how biology works. Simple, bottom line, easy, walk away. And it goes like this. Biology is paint by numbers in reverse, meaning the mind first holds a picture, and then the brain breaks the picture down into numbers, but instead of paints, they're neurochemicals, neurohormones, emotional chemicals, whatever. It's a chemical complement to the picture. And I say, why is it relevant? Because when those chemicals are released into the body, they adjust the body to match the picture. You put a negative picture in, you're going to get a negative chemistry out, and you're going to get a negative body in response. That's as simple as it is right there.
Well, the analogies are wonderful, the lines. I know now why you're such a great teacher, because I love the way that you say, and the relevance of that is, because you use that term a lot. And then it makes me stop, and then you explain what you just said by giving a different version of the same words. So that's a wonderful way to teach, and thank you so much. Now, I've been studying consciousness. I'm interested in what it is, from it being an illusion to something that's not material, and, you know, a reconstruction, a model. I've heard all these different ideas. What is your idea of consciousness? Is it a projection of neurons? Where does it come from? What is your thoughts on this issue?
My thought on this issue is consciousness is an awareness of the environment. And I could break it down to the most reductionistic bottom line awareness of the environment. I said there were switches in the membrane, and you could get down to the vinyl switch of consciousness is an ability to read an environmental signal and then engage a life-supporting biological response. So it's stimulus response. That's the bottom idea of what consciousness is. Can you read something in the environment and make a response to that? So the significance is consciousness is at the level of the most primitive organism. Bacteria surely read their environment and then adjust their behavior to what's going on. So they're aware of what's going on in the environment. And as you go up the scale of organisms, the higher up, the more awareness is granted. And the interesting part is at some point we actually become aware of ourselves, and that's called self-consciousness, and we start to realize that we're an integral organism among all the other organisms. Before that, you don't see yourself, you're just there, a young kid just there, doesn't look back. So we start with a very simple stimulus-response consciousness, and it gets very complex as you increase the number of switches in the membranes and the number of cells. So when you get 100,000 switches on a cell, that's about a number of them. And then I say, and then you have like, a trillion neurons. And all of a sudden it's like 100,000 times a trillion neurons. And you say, oh my God, look at all the possible connections. And that's where the consciousness of a very high organism is formed by the complexity of very simple things, simple switches, but large numbers of them. So the idea of where is our consciousness? Well, our consciousness is being able to read the environment and making an appropriate response to sustain our health and our vitality in an ever-changing environment. So consciousness is being able to read the environment, stimulus, and adjust the biology to thrive in that environment response. And that's basically what it comes down to.
Very nice. Now, you talk about harmony inside the body, the cellular harmony, and then when there's harmony, there's health. So in the honeymoon effect, which I just read and loved, and I, you know, got copies for all the kids, and I think this is very important for couples to understand.
Yes,
your message.
Thank you.
But what is your message here with this harmony on a cellular level, and then when it comes to couples?
The issue for all of us, couples, no couples, individuals, it really plays itself out with couple relationships, but it works on the individual level this way. And it goes, I was just saying that the function of the mind was to interpret the environment, and then the brain will adjust the chemistry to thrive in that interpretation, or at least stay alive in that interpretation. And then I go, okay, now we have one more complexity to add, which was not brought up, but now is necessary. And that is, when I say the mind, there's actually two parts to the mind. There's the basic mind, which is about 90% of the brain, is called the subconscious mind. And by nature, subconscious means unconscious. So it means the subconscious controls things without bringing it to our attention. So in other words, once you learn how to walk, it's a program in the subconscious. But now that it's a program, you don't even have to invoke it by saying, I'm going to walk across the room now. You could just have a vision of something across the room, you want it, and the next thing is you are automatically walking across. So subconscious has a lot of the automatic programs in it, behavioral responses, stimulus response program like that. The conscious mind, the latest evolution, is an ability to like step outside of ourselves and look back at ourselves and seeing what we are doing in the world, that we are an element in the world. Well, previous to conscious, you look out, but you don't see yourself as one of the elements. You're just experiencing the world. But self-consciousness, the higher form, is you get to see yourself, and then you become creative with that. So you can look at yourself and say, what do I want to do with myself? I say, well, this is the difference between conscious and subconscious. Conscious mind is creative. And that's why humans have been able to build computers and go to the moon. It's the creative part of our conscious mind that is doing that. The subconscious mind, in contrast, is a record playback device. And it's very necessary. As I said, once you learn how to walk, you don't have to relearn how to do it all the time. That's because once it's in the program in the subconscious, it's a hardwired program, more or less. And you just have the intention of walking and it will carry it out. Or driving the car. I mean, when you first learned how to drive a car, you had to work with your conscious mind, be very alert and conscious and aware. But after practicing driving the car, and after driving the car for a while, it becomes a habit. And when it's a habit, it means you can get in the car, put the key in, and actually then have a vision, oh, I'm going to go do this and that, while you're driving the car out of the driveway and getting onto the road and driving. You're not even paying attention, really. And I say, yeah, subconscious, you know how to drive now. It's a program. So subconscious is great, unless, of course, some of the programs are devastatingly bad. Then you got a problem, because now you've been programmed with some bad stuff in there. So let's go back and bring this up to another point of profound nature, and that is this. The movie The Matrix is listed as science fiction, but in truth, it is a documentary. Every one of us has been programmed. And the significance becomes very critical, because when we start to find out, are we living our life with our programs, subconscious, or are we living our lives with our creative mind, conscious? Which one is important for running our lives? I go, the first thing is this, conscious mind's creative. I really just have to ask it some kind of simple question like, hey, Corey, tell me what you really want from your life. Tell me what you want. I say, why is that an important question? The answer is because you're creating an idea that doesn't exist yet. So that's an example of creativity. I want to be blank, healthy, happy, rich, whatever. You know, these are, I say, oh, that's an imagination, a creative thought from conscious mind. I go, yeah, that's exactly it. I say, if you're driving your vehicle with your conscious mind, so your conscious mind has the hands on the wheel, then we're driving toward your wishes and your desires, because wishes and desires are the substance of the conscious mind. And I go, the subconscious mind, unfortunately, though, the programs, the primary behavioral programs of subconscious mind, as I said, in the Matrix, we've all been programmed. I'll give you a simple analogy for that. You go to the Apple store, you buy a brand new iPod, you take it out of the box, and you're so excited. The touchscreen on the front of the thing is creative. The touchscreen, you make a playlist, you can adjust the volume, the EQ, you can do all kinds of stuff with the touchscreen. I get a brand new iPod, take it out of the box, and I touch the touchscreen, I say, play, and nothing happens. And then some smart-ass little five-year-old sitting next to you goes, hey, mister, well, you didn't download any programs. You can't push play. And it's like, oh. And that now is a profound understanding, and that is this. A human being does not express consciousness as a brain function as a predominant state until after 7. Before 7, the predominant brain state of a child is in theta, EEG, vibration theta, which is a state of imagination. And this is why kids under 7 can mix the real world and the imaginary world, because they're operating from theta, imagination. So the mother says, give me the broom, and the kid says, I don't know what you're talking about. This is a horse. To the kid at that moment, the broom is a horse in their imagination. So I say, yeah, that's where kids are at. And then I tell you, theta is hypnosis. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, the first 7 years of your life is download behavior. So you could be a member, a functioning member of a family, a functioning member of a community. You have how many thousands of rules? And I say, you can't teach an infant thousands of rules, but guess what? Their brain is in record. So what do? They observe their mother, the father, the siblings, and people in the community observe them like a video recorder. They observe their behavior and download it. Oh, that's how you respond. Oh, that's how you respond. That's how you respond. So the first 7 years is downloading programs. Now the problem, the conscious mind isn't working at that point. So the programs being downloaded are going in without any filter of any kind. Whatever it was seen or heard is copied directly down into a program. Well, psychologists will now reveal to you that 70% or more of the downloaded behaviors that we received and downloaded before age 7, disempowering, self-sabotaging, and limiting behaviors. The vast majority. And I say, why is it relevant? I say, well, these behavioral programs, when we engage them, are actually interfere with our lives. And I say, well, okay, then let's just use the conscious mind. That's the one with wishes and desires. Let's go that way instead of the program. It goes, cool. Now the problem. And this, everybody out there, this is the problem. We believe that we are controlling our life with our wishes and desires. You get up in the morning, yeah, I'm seeking health, happiness, wealth, money, whatever. You know, I say, oh, great, we're going to go out and get it. And then you come home at the end of the day and you didn't seem to make any progress. And at some point, it's like, geez, I keep going towards success, but it never happened, so the universe is against me. It's just not supporting me, okay? Wow, this is the one we fix right now. You ready? It turns out that we think we're running our lives with our conscious mind, which has the direction we want, wishes and desires, and yet it turns out this is totally not true, and for a simple reason. The conscious mind is capable of thinking. So, you know, I could say, hey, Corey, tell me what you're doing at Sunday at 2 o'clock. And, of course, if you really try to answer that question, just be realistic. The answers are not outside. The answers are inside. You have to go inside your head to get the answer. So I say, when you're thinking, your attention is directed inward. I go, yeah. I say, well, does that mean if you're like walking down the street and all of a sudden you have a thought, because your attention is directed inward, you stop and then the thought is complete and then you start walking? I go, no. You're walking down the street, you have a thought, you're still walking down the street. And I go, wait a minute. The conscious mind just went inside with a thought and I'm walking down the street. Who's controlling that? And I go, the autopilot. The subconscious program. It knows how to walk. It knows how not to walk into a tree. It can do it without you. It's like driving the car when you're not paying attention, when you're thinking about what you're going to buy at the store, or you're talking to a passenger and you're driving the vehicle with so much going on. Your conscious mind's not paying attention. Your subconscious is paying attention. It's a million times more powerful than the conscious mind. So don't be concerned. Subconscious is vastly powerful. I go, so here's the relevance. Conclusion. We believe we are running our lives with our conscious mind, wishes, and desires. We also believe that our struggles in getting there are because we're not being supported by the universe. Now, the correct interpretation. The wishes and desires in our conscious mind, when we use them, will take us in that direction. But when we are thinking, when thoughts are going through our head, the subconscious is the default control because the conscious is busy. And so now comes the data from science. 95% of the day, your mind is in thought. I go, yeah, what's the relevance? Well, then it means 95% of the day, your conscious wishes and desires are not driving your vehicle. 95% of the day, you're being driven by the programs. I go, yeah, but if most of those programs are negative, that would sabotage my life. I go, exactly. And that's what happened. And I go, but you don't see it. It's called subconscious. The behavior is below conscious. So I give this one little story, and if you understand the story, then the whole thing comes to like, oh my God, and here's a story. Presume that sometime during your life you had a friend and you were very close to your friend. You knew your friend's behavior very well, and you happen to know your friend's parent. And one day, you see that your friend has the exact same behavior as their parent, and this excites you, so you really want to tell your friend. You go, hey, Bill, you're just like your dad. And then you back away from Bill. Bill goes ballistic. Bill says, how can you compare me to my dad? Most people laugh at this point in the audience. Why? Because almost everybody's had that experience. And I go, most profound story, here it is. Everyone else can see that Bill behaves like his dad. The only one who doesn't see it is Bill. Explanation. In the first 7 years, Bill acquired his behavior by focusing on his dad and recording his dad's behavior so that Bill's subconscious is downloaded with his dad's behavior. That during the day, 95% of the day, Bill is engaged in thinking. So that means 95% of the day, he, by default, is playing a subconscious program, which comes from his dad. But the reason why he's playing the program, remember, was his conscious mind was busy. So the point is, Bill is the only one that doesn't see the behavior because it's playing as default and his conscious mind's not paying attention. And I say, well, what's the relevance? I say, when he gets home at night and sees that his life didn't work and has the judgment that the universe is not supporting me, it's like, oh my God, it was his own behavior that was sabotaging it. And it was invisible because it's called subconscious. And every one of us has a subconscious system that has up to 70% or more disempowering programs. And every one of us, like Bill, is operating during the day 95% of the time from the programs, not from our wishes and desires. So the movie The Matrix is true. We've all been programmed. Our lives are now determined by the program. You say, is this new, Dr. Lipton? I go, no. 400 years. Listen, the Jesuits have had a saying that they boast about, and the saying goes, give me a child until it's seven, and I will show you the man. And people never recognized what the heck they were talking about. And what they were saying was precisely this, give me the child for the first 7 years, which happens to be the period of programming, and I will show you the man, meaning whatever the program is, 95% of that individual's life is going to be that program. So whatever the program is, that will be your life until you decide to change the program. Until that happens, you are in the matrix. And the way out of the matrix, just to, you know, to give people some brilliant idea of what would it be like not to be in the program, and the answer is this. If you've ever fallen deeply in love with somebody and experienced what I refer to as the honeymoon period, which is like full of health, happiness, energy, life is beautiful, you're in love, and I go, you know, right up until you met that person, life could have sucked. But now you meet this person, the next day it's like, oh my God, this is heaven on earth, this is beautiful, everything is so wonderful, I'm so in love, even the job I don't like is better, everything is great, I'm so in love. The question is, what happened in 24 hours that before that life was miserable, now life is heaven on earth? And the answer is, science has now recognized that when you fall in love, it's tantamount to taking a red pill. It's a period where you don't default to the subconscious programming. It's a period where you actually play your life using your wishes and desires as the program. So you become the loving, wonderful partner who is so full of life and joy and all that while you're not playing the program. And the honeymoon unfortunately ends at some point for most people because inevitably life gets busy and you start thinking. And when you start thinking, all of a sudden, the behavior that comes out of you is no longer the honeymoon behavior. It was all those behaviors, those negative ones that you got the first 7 years that start showing up, and they're throwing monkey wrenches. These negative behaviors that didn't play during honeymoon now start to play because you're thinking, and those negative behaviors are what compromise the honeymoon and actually end that whole experience. And that means you stop being in control and you let the program take over. Corey, I'm sorry I went on and on like that, but I thought if I got from A to B, maybe I would make a point.
Every moment with you is a pleasure indeed. And that was a very powerful and uplifting message. And I know people are going to have to sort of rotate their mind around that and listen to it several times. Bruce, you have a website, brucelipton.com. We can find your books there, and it's an excellent site. But I noticed also that you have an online course available. Can you tell us about that?
It's a program with 10 to 12 hours of information, including lots of slides and video clips and things like that to fully explain the new biology from the basic level of the molecules of the cell to creating heaven on earth. That whole understanding of who we are and how we really work versus the belief of how we work, which has been passed down and has been incorrect and disempowering for all these years. The new beliefs and the new understandings, the new science are all self-empowerment. It's all recognizing, oh my God, I'm creating. And then you say, well, that's so New Agey. And I go, you know, in 1925, when quantum physics first showed up on the scene, the quantum physicists who were all theoreticians at that moment, really, left us at that moment in 1925 with an understanding that consciousness is what creates life. The whole physical manifestation of life is, in some sense, a large illusion based on consciousness. And it's interesting because now the new biology is saying the exact same thing. You change your life as you change your consciousness. And I say, well, that, you know, placebo effect is a great example. And yet, while I talk about placebo effect, I want people to really understand this because it's not talked about. And it's the not talked about part is the, oh, my God, part. And that is this. When we talk about placebo effect, I say, yeah, positive thinking about that this therapy, this pill or whatever it is, this is the thing that's going to heal me. And you go through whatever that was, pill or therapy, you get healed and find out that the pill and therapy were, the pill was sugar, the therapy was just a sham, a fake. But you healed yourself, and the idea is, yeah, your mind healed you because what? The vision in your mind was you were going to be healed. And like everybody goes, yeah, placebo effect. So now let me emphasize this, and this is most important, and that is a negative belief, a negative image, a negative thought is equally powerful to a positive thought in producing an outcome, but, and this is the but, the outcome is in a different direction. A positive thought brings health and harmony. A negative thought actually can produce any disease and can actually cause you to die. You can die, but the fear can kill you. A fear, a thought can kill you. And it's like, oh, so thoughts are controlling us. I go, yeah, positive thoughts, when we express them, are the equivalent of a placebo effect. They can heal you. And I go, and negative thoughts, the name for it in science is called nocebo. So the nocebo effect, the consequence of a negative thought, can cause any disease on this planet, number one, and it could also just kill you. A thought can kill you. So all of a sudden we say, wait, we've been looking at biology as cells and chemistry and drugs and all that kind of stuff, and we've left out the mind. I go, the mind is the primary determinant of your life and your biology and what happens to you. It's not an accident. You're not a victim, except a victim of not being aware of how it works. And I'll close for a minute to give an opportunity for more. With this, people are aware knowledge is power. I go, absolutely. But I also want to emphasize it this way, because this is more relevant. Say it's like glass half full, a glass half empty. Let me tell you the other way of saying it because it's more relevant. Knowledge is power is one way. The other way is a lack of knowledge is a lack of power. Point. We have been deprived of the knowledge of how our biology works, and in fact have been misdirected to the belief that genes are controlling this, which makes you a victim, which means you have no power, to a new understanding that says, oh my God, we are creating everything in our life, from the behavior to the emotions to the outcome to the experiences, down to, as quantum physics says, every atom is part of our consciousness. And if we don't exercise it, then you have lost control. And since no one has been supporting this in our conventional science world, which is run by the pharmaceutical industry, because they don't want people to heal. Healing means I empower you, and empowerment is going to come from the reality of your mind, your consciousness, or the ultimate control.
That is so powerful. Wow. So powerful. And such a wonderful consolidation of words with the message in mind. Our time is gone, Bruce. Thank you so much for making
the
time.
No, we've got more time, right? There's some more, right? Come on, baby. We've got a few more minutes. Come on, extend it, babe. Go.
Okay. Listen, something that comes to mind right away is this GOI Peace Award that you are the recipient of. Now, I'm just on their website, and it says the GOI Peace Foundation is dedicated to promoting world peace. And boy, I mean, that's where I'm at. I'm all over that. So people say to me, Corey, that is just a ridiculous objective. Don't you know that humans by nature are poisoned? They're violent. Just take a look at the world,
Corey.
Look at the world.
But where's that from? Corey, where's it from? The answer? Programming. A child is born completely built on altruism, trust, and love. That child comes into the world that way, and then programming will redirect it the other way. And they always have said, oh, well, violence is a natural part of human biology because look at the chimpanzees. See how the males kill all these other things and the dominant male and the war and the fight and all that. We're like them. And it's got, no, we're more like another version of a chimpanzee called a bonobo. It's a higher evolved organism than the chimp. I say, why is it higher evolved? Well, number one, it's not male-dominated. It's co-dominant. There's male-female co-dominance. And the next thing is this. In the bonobo community, there is no violence. And it's actually kind of funny because if they all get stressed, the moment they get stressed, they just have sex. And so the relevance about that is it is the truest version of make love, not war, because instead of stress turning into an aggression, it actually is released through sex. And so basically, there's a, you know, it's a female and male co-dominance, non-violence, and they live in this peaceful harmony world. And it's like, that's the world that humans are based on, not the chimpanzee world. That's an earlier version. So, yes, human children are born with love, and even infants can look at a situation and determine if someone is helping somebody or actually antagonistic to helping somebody. An infant can determine that by about 1 year of life. They can look at a scene. And why is it relevant? Because they will always support any individual that enhances life and not associate with those that are antagonistic to our health and harmony. An infant knows that. And I said, well, what happened to it? It's like, oh, well, as I said, the Matrix, we got programmed. Everybody got programmed. There's no way you could be here if you didn't have 7 years of download. That's the bottom line. And the issue is, are you living from the program? Yeah, almost everybody is. Or are you aware that there is a program and you can change it? Because if you're aware of that, then you actually become the master of your life. And when you're aware of your ability to change these inherent programs that are running 95% of the time, you are powerful beyond belief. And it's real interesting, just not make it complicated, because the issue is, well, hell, you started getting programmed in the last trimester of pregnancy through the first 7 years. So what did you learn when you were one? You go, I have no idea what the hell I learned when I was one. I don't even know being one. And I go, okay, so that means that you got fundamental programming through your life experiences, but you actually have no conscious awareness of what these programs are. And I go, that's true. Because most of the programming was really way before you were aware of anything. So I say, well, how can I deal with it? Let's make it easy for everyone, Corey, because here's how it works. You ready? 95% of our life, according to science, is coming from the program. Your life is a printout of your program. Point. Everything you like that comes into your life relatively easily comes in because there's a program to support that being in your life. In contrast, and this is the one, all those things that you struggle to get, everything you put effort in to make happen, things you have to sweat over and work hard at because I'm going to make it happen. And I just say, first question, why are you working so hard? Answer, first answer. Inevitably, your subconscious program doesn't support that. So basically, you don't have to spend a lot of time at the shrink. You could just look at your life and say, hey, the things that are working, hey, they're working because I got programs to support them. But everything else that I have to work hard, struggle at, or whatever, put effort into, it's because I have a program that doesn't support that. Now, immediately, you have access to, so what are my issues that I want to reprogram? And then there are now opportunities to rewrite the programming. And I say, conclusion, bottom line, what would it all mean? And I go like this. You look at your program, you find the things you struggle over, you rewrite those and put them into positive beliefs, like not struggle, but, oh, of course, this is a, you know, I can have this. And I say, great. And I say, well, what's the relevance? And here it goes. You lived in a honeymoon when you stopped playing the program for that period when you fell in love. But the honeymoon goes away when you default back into the subconscious with the negative programs. Now I say, wait. I can rewrite those negative programs, turn them all into positive programs, and then I say, well, then what? I say, well, whether you're conscious or whether you're unconscious, you're still living heaven on earth. And that's the destination.
Bruce, are you working on any new books at this time?
No, not at this time. I've got some other ideas, and I'm real anxious to some of the stuff I really am involved with is the evolutionary movement that this planet is going through right now, and that people are observing. And I just want, you know, if there's a little line opportunity, so what about the system that looks like it's falling apart right here? And I go, it is falling apart, and that is the best news possible. You know, it's like, oh, what do you mean? It's falling apart, and you're jumping up and down in joy. And I go, because the culture and civilization we have created and are living by, and the behaviors we're living by, are so self-destructive that we are facing our own extinction. And this is not 1,000 years from now. This is within the century. And so we are undermining our lives because we're destroying the environment and destroying each other in the process. Self-destruction. It's like we're going through an autoimmune disease here. Self-destruction. And the significance is simply this: to build a culture and a civilization that we can thrive with on this planet means you cannot build it on the foundation that we have right now, because the cultural foundation we have right now is the one that is producing the problems. So when you look at the world and it's falling apart and everybody goes, ah, it's falling apart. And I go, yeah, thank goodness it is, because this is the opportunity to then create the new culture. And the millennial generation out there, those 40 years and under, most of them feel like, oh my God, I can't get involved. I can't get a good job. I owe all this money. Life sucks, you know, and all that. And it's like, this population doesn't recognize that they are the ones that are going to change civilization. And the main reason is because they're not connected to the structure. A structure can only stand as long as people hold it up. And then you start to find the millennial generation is so disconnected. You know, if you went to many of them and say, listen, hey, I understand the stock market's going to crash, and most millennials will look at you and go, so who cares? Like, I own a stock or something, you know? They're not connected, and people don't see it. Ah, when more than half the population, as it is right now, is not supporting the system, it's inevitable the system is going to fall, and a new system is going to come. It doesn't end, just creates something better. And so my parting words, if nothing else, Corey, is, yeah, it looks like crazy times out there. And I go, it is crazy times, but it's the coming down of a way of life that is not sustainable. And we must stop the way we are destroying the ecosystem, because we are the ecosystem. In a sense, we are an expression of the ecosystem. The ecosystem gets broken, humans can't live here either. So wake up, time for evolution. And when you become aware of it, you change the old programs, as we talked about. You step into the other world, and then the honeymoon is not a short period anymore. In that other world, the honeymoon is every day of your life. And that's what was. That's the destination, and it's great.
Bruce Lipton, PhD, is a cell biologist, a scientist, and really quite a phenomenon. Remarkable teacher, author. And Bruce, we thank you so much for your generosity, for making the time to share this with our students, your message, for the work you're doing in your books. And what can I say? I just wish you all the very best. And I want you to know that I have been affected by your work personally, and many people I know also. So thank you very much.
I want to thank you again, and I really want to thank the audience, because change is going to come from the audience. Everyone that's listening, by listening, is automatically part of what is called the cultural creatives. The cultural creatives look for answers outside the box, because the answers inside the box are not working. And here we are. So thank you. Thank the audience. And I so appreciate being here with you, Corey.
Likewise, Bruce. Take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com.
Representing lifestyle. New way of life. Listen, it's SNU, sing along, it's true, yo, coming through straight, Malik, with Sports Nutrition Update, prolong your life, live long, stay strong, for it won't be long, till your time is gone, so I sing this song, to pass on wisdom, hit us up, at CoreyHawley.com, love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.